We're holding on to Zion Omadeze, the seventh line of the wide lines. We're up to, we had been going through in the Mishnah, through the different parts, through the different things that that require the basin of 71. So one thing the Mishnah mentioned is in order to declare an Irani Dachas, you need the basin of 71 to do that. So the Einos in Irani Dachas, the Mishnah had said you can't declare an Irani Dachas only by any lower basin, only the basin of 71 can make such a determination. So the Gemara says, Manani Mili, where do we know that from? Amar Ab Chia by Yosef, Amar Ab Oshia, Da Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says, we talked about this yesterday, the Pasuk says you should take out that man or that woman who worshipped Avodah Zarah, you should bring him out, and the Pasuk says you should bring him out El Sha'arecha, to your gates, which means to your cities, to your local cities based in, and judge them and punish them. So we learn from that, since it says only individual men and women you can bring out to your gates, to your local botadinim, viyatamotzi, call it your kula lisharecha, but you can't take out an entire city to your gates to be judged by a local based in, meaning it has to be judged by the national based in, by the national Sanhedrin. So that's where we see then that the determination of the Irani Dachas has to be done by the Sanhedrin of 71. At the end of the Masechta, when we go into the details, into more of the details of the Irani Dachas, we're going to talk about over there that after the city, they have to besiege the city and conquer it, because obviously the people in there are not going to give up, their lives and their property so easily. But once they do, you do have local Bote Dinin that judge to see who is, how many people, so they can figure out how many people worship Avodah Zarah over there and see if they turn out to be the majority or not. But once they do, then you need the Sanhedrin. Well, you need to begin with the Sanhedrin of 71 to decide that this seems to fit the criteria of an Irani Dachas, that all the other criteria have been met, and therefore to go and start that process. The Mishnah had said, Ein Osin Irani Dachas v'Sfar. So the Mishnah had mentioned, by the way, a couple of dinim regarding an Irani Dachas. So one of them was that you can't declare an Irani Dachas by the border of Eretz Yisrael. My time, the Gemara says, why not? Mikir b'chol merachmana, because the pasuk describes this case of an Irani Dachas. It says that you find in your midst, among you, you find that there's a city that's going that might become an Irani Dachas. So mikir b'chol literally means from within you. So that means v'loy min asfar, as opposed to someplace on the border. So therefore, city on the border, because of that, can't be declared an Irani Dachas. Then the Mishnah continues, V'loy Sholosh, you also can't declare three cities to be an Irani Dachas. Dichtiv, and the reason for that is because the Pasuk says Achas. The Pasuk says that Kisishma ba'achas Sarecha. It says if you find out in one of your, V'loy Sholosh, Irani Dachas, Dichtiv Achas. Because the Pasuk says one, implying that you found that one particular city was subject to becoming an Irani Dachas. And now the Mishnah had said, Aval Oisin Achas Eishtayim, but you could declare one or two as Irani Dachas Tichtiv Orecha, because the Pasuk says that you find out that in your cities, plural, there is an Irani Dachas, so therefore we understand from that. Because the pasuk says me'achas orecha, the pasuk says from one of your cities. So the one is a miut, meaning only one city at a time can be declared an Irani Dachas. But on the other hand, it's also saying orecha, your cities, plural, implying that it can be more than one. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Achas, when the pasuk says one, means achas v'loy sholosh, means you can only declare one, but not three. As far as two, we said that you could, but in other words, the point is, but three, you definitely can't. After Omer Achas V'loy Sholosh, so you're going to say that it means you can only do one and you can't do three. Maybe in fact it means that you can't do two either. Maybe Achas means literally only one and no more than one ever. So no, true. No, because the fact is, again, the pasuk says Arecha, your cities, and the plural implies two, because Miut Rabim Shnayim. So how does Shtayim Omer? So then that means that two is valid to do. Hamani Mekayim Achas. So what does it mean when it says one has to necessarily mean Achas V'Loi Shalosh, means only one but not three. So we're left with the din that we just said, namely that it is valid for a Beis Din, for a Sanhedrin, to declare two cities as an Eir Nidachas, but not more than that, not three. Tosfos says in that case, and Taka, why did it have to say achas at all? Just say arecha, and we understand that arecha automatically means two. So then you would say that it means two, and you would assume that it means no more than two. But Mal Shah points out on Tosfos that when one way of thinking of it is, you could say tefasta merubaloi tefasta, you could say that when it would be an open ended number. Here it's either two or three, so maybe you could say maybe in fact it would have meant three. So that's how it is. They can do two, but not more than that. Now, what does this mean? How many? What do we mean that a Beis Din can do two, can declare two, but they can't declare three? Which Bati Dinim are we talking? What do we mean? In other words, do we mean one per generation? Do we mean one? Do we mean one per year or something? So, what do we mean? What do we mean by all that? So the Gemara says Zimnin Omer Rav. So there were some times when Rav would say the Beis Din Echad Hu De'Ein Oisin, when was saying that they can't make a that they can't make three cities. And Irani Dachas, that would be only in one Beis Din, only in one Sanhedrin Gerla. Habishnaim or Shloisha Bati Din and Oisin, but they could do it under two or three different Bati Dinim. In other words, Rashi explains that what Rav would mean by that is, listen, you know, eventually the members of the Sanhedrin pass away, and then new ones are appointed. So sometimes Rav would explain that if you have the members of the Sanhedrin all passed away and have been replaced since then now they could declare a new Eir Nidachas, and there would be no limits. In other words, each Sanhedrin could, in its time, declare one Eir Nidachas, even though it comes out that ultimately you have many cities like that. Sometimes Rav would say that. The Zimnin Omer Rav. Sometimes instead, Rav would say, "Afilu b'shnayim u'shloisha bota dinim la'olam ein oisin." Sometimes Rav would instead say that no, even if it's different, two or three separate bota dinim, nevertheless they can't ever make more than two Eir Nidachasin. So in other words, according to that second way of Rav saying, it would come out that in history the maximum number of Eir Nidachasin that could be made would be two. That's how Rashi learns that Beis Din Echad means as long as the members of the original Sanhedrin are still alive, and Shnayim U'Shlosha Bati Dinim would be after they passed away and been replaced. The Yad Ramah brings a possibility that it means that Shnayim U'Shlosha Bati Dinim means in other words each time the Sanhedrin would sit might be considered a separate Beis Din, and therefore in other words it would mean in different sessions. So maybe even according to the Rav's first way of looking at it, they would be able to do different ones in separate sessions, just not all at one time. So the Gemara says, my time is a Rav. So okay, the first understanding we can say, if it's a separate Beis Din of separate people according to Rashi, or separate sessions according to the Yad Ramah, then fine, the clock kind of resets. But if you're going to tell me that it means, according to Rav's second possibility, that it means that you can never once previous Bati Dinim have declared two Eir Nidachasin, then that's it. You can't do any more than that ever again. What would be the reason behind that? And the answer is Mishum Korcha. The reason behind it would be because then you're going to make a bold spot in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, you're going to have too much of Eretz Yisrael is going to be desolate. After all, an Eir Nidachas is among the dinim of it. The whole city has to be burnt and destroyed, and you're never allowed to rebuild it. We don't want that much of Eretz Yisrael to be in that situation. However, Rish Omer Rish Lakish, but Rish Lakish says this that we're talking about, the limitation on how many you could make, Lo Shano Ela Mamakam Echad. That would only apply within one region of Eretz Yisrael. Now, we learned earlier in the Perek, in connection with the Dinim of Ibar Hashana, that Eretz Yisrael basically has three large regions. It's basically divided into three large regions. You have Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, Eivor Yarden, exactly what it sounds like, the area across the Yarden, and the Galil, the north of Eretz Yisrael. So Rish Lakish says, when we talk about that there's a limit, that you can only do two Irani Dachasin, but not more than that, that would apply only within one region of Eretz Yisrael. But Rish Lakish says if it was two or three different places in Eretz Yisrael, then it would be fine even to have, so you could have two in Yehuda and two in Eivor Yarden and so forth, and even one Beistin could do that. So even though we're saying Mishum Korcha, we are concerned about this possibility of making Eretz Yisrael desolate. So Rish Lakish understands that to mean only when it's within the same region, but if it's in different regions, then it's not a problem. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, ein oisin mishum korcha. We can't make more than two irani dachasin mishum korcha, because we still have that problem of making Eretz Yisrael desolate. So therefore it is an absolute limitation that there's only so many that you can do. Okay, and the Gemara points out Tanya Kavas Seder Rabbi Yechanan. In fact, we have a Braisa that says like the way Rabbi Yechanan explains it. Ein oisin shalosh ayaros menudochus be'Eretz Yisrael. You cannot declare three irani dachasin in Eretz Yisrael. Aval oisin shdayim, but you could declare two, because when achas be'Yehuda v'achas be'Galil. So, for example, one city in Yehuda and one city in Galil could be designated an irani dachas and destroyed. Aval shdayim be'Yehuda, shdayim be'Galil. Ein oisin, but you can't declare. You can't declare two in Yehuda and two in the Galil. So you have two parts over here. You can't have more than two. You can't have more than two in the entire country, and you can't have two, and you can't have even two in one. So you can have two in one in one part of the country, one in Yehuda, one in Galil, but not two, not more than two anywhere, and not even two in one region in Eretz Yisrael. So my time, and the reason for that is, as the Braisa continues, Shema Yishmu Nochrim, because Goyim might hear about it, V'yachrivu as Eretz Yisrael, and then they're going to destroy Eretz Yisrael, because so far the Braisa is saying, like what Rabbi Yechanan says, that the limit is, the limitations are as follows: never more than two, and never more than one within one region. When you can have two, would be one in one region and another in the other region. Now the Rambam actually has an interesting explanation about it. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, when he brings this whole concept, he says that it means that the Beis Din can't declare three Irani Dachasin one next to the other, but they could declare three if they're far apart. Now, that seems to be not what it says in the Sugya over here, which we're saying, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, and we're saying on the Braisa supports him, that the maximum that Beis Din can ever declare is two. So in fact, it's interesting. The Maharik, a few generations after the Rambam, a late Rishon, was asked, "How do you fend for the Rambam?" And he gives an answer. He has a truva over there where he discusses the Rambam's opinion at great length, but he has a funny way of saying it. He has a little poem over there about how difficult it is to answer, about the Irani Dachas. He says, Tamanti Yodi Batsalakas. He has a whole rhyming thing over there, Tamanti Yodi Batsalakas. I don't know what to do. Nef chutzua like kabasa bakalachas, kikoshta like kasapachas. He goes through like an 8-line poem or something over there, each line ending with something rhyming with nidachas before launching into, well, how do we find for the Rambam? So the Braisa is saying that point, that at least according to the surface meaning of it, that the maximum that they can ever do is two, and they can never do three, and they can never do more than one in one region. Okay, and the Gemara continues, the Braisa continues, Smuchal Asfar, when you're talking about a city near the border, Afilo Achas Einoisin, then, like we said in the Mishnah, you can't declare even one city, and Erani Dachas, and the Gemara says, my time, why is that? Shema Yerushimu Nochrim, Yachrivu Es Eretz Yisrael, because Goyim might hear and use that as a base to go and destroy Eretz Yisrael, because, after all, you have now a destroyed city on the border, now you have a gap in Eretz Yisrael's defenses, and they might come through there. You have to keep in mind, by the way, you know, cities are not necessarily one on top of the other like you have nowadays. You do have a distance between them, but nevertheless, you know, each city can be responsible for the defense of an area of a certain area of land around it. But if you have a city destroyed, then you don't have that, and then it opens up the possibility of going pouring in through the border. So the Gemara asks, what do you need that reason for? But typically, the Mekirbacha Amar Rahmana, you have a better reason why, you can't declare an Erani Dachas by the border. We said before, the Mekirbacha Amar Rahmana, we said before, the Pasuk says that if you find Mekirbacha among you, that there's a city that is worshipping Avodah Zarah, then you have to do such and such. And we said Mekirbacha means not on the border, Vavoy Min Asfar. So what do we need a reason for? And the answer is Reb Shimon, because the author of our Braisa is Reb Shimon, the Dorish Taima Dekra. Reb Shimon always goes and looks for the reason behind the mitzvah in the Torah. So in other words, Reb Shimon is saying Reb Shimon is saying, when the Torah says Mekirbacha, why would the Torah do that? Why would the Torah exempt a city on the border of Eretz Yisrael from ever becoming an Erani Dachas? The reason is because of this, because we don't want the borders of Eretz Yisrael to be exposed. Now, does that mean that Reb Shimon is actually arguing on, is there any nafkamina between him and the Chachamim on that? So the Kesef Mishnah explains on the Rambam that no, it's Reb Shimon usually does that. He gives time a dekra. But on the other hand, though, the Minchas Chinuch brings a bunch of potential nafka minas in it. He discusses at some length over here that there could be cases where the city would have to be an Erani Dachas, but because of this technicality, we can't do that. Nevertheless, maybe for other purposes, we should treat it like an Erani Dachas. For example, that would mean in terms of the type of Misa that the inhabitants get. So maybe we wouldn't go as far as treating it like a full-fledged Erani Dachas and burn the whole city and destroy it. But nevertheless, we might still have to give Misa to the individuals there and to the people who convinced them to worship Avodah Zarah as though it was an Erani Dachas. Then he talks about also, for example, what would happen if the city at the time they worshipped Avodah Zarah was on the border, and then afterwards, let's say new cities were built near there, and now it's not on the border, closer to the border, and now it's not the border city anymore, then maybe now we would be able to actually go and implement the Erani Dachas protocol, because after all, the only thing that was blocking it was that the Goyim might hear and invade Eretz Yisrael, and now, according to Reb Shimon, you don't have that consideration, whereas according to the Chachamim, we would say, no, the Pasuk said Mekirbacha, and therefore, that's it. That's an absolute gzeiras hakasav. And he goes through Barichus over there, the Minchas Chinuch, and discusses a few different possible nafkaminas in it. Next, after we went through the various things in the Mishnah that require the Sanhedrin of 71, so the Mishnah had explained, well, where do we get the number 71 from? So the Mishnah had said Sanhedrin Gdola Hoysa, that the Sanhedrin Gdola consisted of 71, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it was only 70. So the Gemara says, "My time, I did Rabbanon." Now the fact is, the Pasuk says when Hashem tells Moshe to gather together Zakenim, he says, "Gather together to me 70 Zakenim." So you have a number 70. Where are you getting the 71st from? So the Chachamim say in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah they say, where do we get the 71st? Is because the Mishnah had said, "Moshe al gabehen," that Moshe is on top of them. So therefore we have 70 plus 1. So my time I did abon, I'm your Moshe al gabeim. Why indeed do the Chachamim say that we have to have Moshe on top of that, meaning in other words that you have 71 total? Maybe not. Maybe Moshe counts as one of the 70. And the answer is Amar Kravi Siatz Vosham Imach. No, because when Hashem tells him to gather the 70 Zkenim, Hashem tells him they will stand there together with you. Meaning Imach va'at bahadayu means with you, plus you're going to be there. So there's your 71. For Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, no, imach mishum shechina. The fact that it says imach means because the shechina is going to be there. Because we know in Parashat Baal Loischa, when Moshe chooses the 70 Zkenim, then the shechina came and rested on them, and they all said nevuah, as the Gemara is now going to discuss that story. So Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that the word imach means because of the Shechina. So what does that mean? So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that because the Shechina is going to be resting over there, therefore you are going to have to stand outside, therefore they are going to have to stand outside the Ohel Moed. You can go inside, and then the Shechina will rest, and they will be outside the Ohel Moed, they will be outside the Mishkan proper, But so, in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, imach doesn't mean that it just means, in other words, they're going to be with you in the sense that they have to be not exactly where you are, but near you. But it doesn't mean that you are going to be the 71st member of the Sanhedrin. It can actually mean, in other words, that there would be altogether 70, including you, but you're going to be inside, and the rest of them are going to be outside. Rashi's second explanation is because the Shechina is going to be resting, therefore you, Moshe, have to be together with them. The spirit of Nevuah that's going to come on them is going to be from you, as Hashem had said, or as Hashem says, in those psukim, v'otsalti min haruach, I'm going to take from the spirit of Nevuah that's on you and put it on them. Rashi mentions over there in the pasuk, it's like when you light one candle from another, so therefore they have to be with you there in order for the Shechina to rest on them. Later on in the Masechta, actually, Rashi gives a different, yet another explanation that imach also means that they have to be miyuchosim like you. It means that they have to have exactly that. That in other words, so actually there are other gemaras, there are other places in Shas. So here later in our Masechta, Rashi explains that it means that they have to be miyuchosim like you, but not necessarily that it means that you have to be the 71st member. And then this Gemara is also in Hodias, and Rashi brings yet a fourth explanation over there, that it means that we're talking about that it's a generation of tzaddikim gemurim, where I want my Shechina to rest on them, and therefore I want them to be with you. In any case, according to any of these explanations, Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't necessarily mean that Moshe has to be a 71st member of the Beis Din. All right, the Gemara says, Rabbanan, what are the Chachamim answer to that? The answer is Amakura, fine, but you have another pasuk back when Yisrael is suggesting to Moshe to appoint Dayanim in the first place, and Yisrael tells him, "V'nosu itcha b'masahom," they will bear together with you the burden of the people. So itcha means ba'at ba'adayim, they're going to be with you, meaning that there's going to be you and then there's going to be them. So therefore, so it means you have 71 then. Rabbi Yehuda, and what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says it's similar. It means itcha b'daimin loch. The word itcha means they have to be similar like you. They have to be like you. So like we said, they have to be miyuchosin, and they also have to be, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, free of mumim. So therefore, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be with you, as they have to be 70 of them plus you. V'rabbanan, and the Chachamim answer back to that. Mivahoko ma'alecha v'nosu itcha nafka. No, they say, listen, the Pasuk also says, Yisrael continues, that the point of appointing Dayanim will be, they will make it easier for you, it'll be easier for you, v'nosu itcha, and they will bear the burden together with you. So when you have that second itach, then you can learn from that they have to be like you as far as being yuchosim. And when we say yuchosim, by the way, we have to remember, in Shas, Yichus doesn't mean like what we mean nowadays, that you're descended from some famous distinguished person. It just means, in other words, that their yichus is, that their family lineage is clean. There's no mamzeros or anything like that They have to be like you, Moshe, in not having any mumim. So the Chachamim say you can learn that from the second itach. You don't need to learn it from the first one. The first one can be to tell you that in fact you have 70 of them plus Moshe. So the Gemara doesn't pursue the point is, in other words, that now that pasuk about v'nosu itcha v'masa am is not talking about the national Sanhedrin, because that's talking about the lower Batidinim that Yisrael is telling Moshe to appoint. Well, the Chacham said the Yalfa Sanhedrin Gerlam Sanhedrin Ktana. Well, then we can learn that the same rules apply to the Sanhedrin Gerlam and to the smaller Sanhedrins, that at all levels they have to be free of mumim and free of blemishes in yichus. So, meaning, so, 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 therefore, so, so, in other words, according to them, now the extra word itcha to mean that there's going to be on the Sanhedrin Gerla, there's going to be a 71st member, namely Moshe. Rabbi Yehuda Bepashtus, the Gemara doesn't pursue it any further, but Rabbi Yehuda Bepashtus would say that you couldn't necessarily learn that, and therefore you need two psukim, one for the Sanhedrin Gerla, one for the Sanhedrin Ktana. Agav, it's interesting, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein in the early 80s, he was already very old, and at one point he had to go to the hospital to have a pacemaker put in, so he actually discussed with his son-in-law, Tendler, and there's actually a tshuva that he discusses in Igros Moshe of the question, does such a procedure make a person a Baal Mum? In other words, put it this way, Rav Moshe knew his caliber. He knew if Mashiach comes during his lifetime, he may well be a member of the Sanhedrin, whether Gdola or Ktana, Bepashtus Gdola, and therefore he can't be a Baal Mum. So in any case, but we see that's how it is, that a criterion for being a member of the Sanhedrin is not to be a Baal Mum. Okay. Let's go and analyze that story about the appointment of the 70 Zkenim in more detail. The Pasuk says like this. So the Pasuk describes how Moshe gathered the 70 Zkenim, and then it says, Vayisharu shnei anoshim ma-machne. Two men were left behind in the Machne. And they were Eldad and Medan, and as the Pesukim go on to say, they said Nevuah. So what do we mean they were left in the, in the Machne? Yesh omer b'kalpi nishtayru. Some say that it means that they were left over in the ballot box, in the girdle box. What do we mean by that? Shabashah sha'amalai HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. So what happened? Hashem had told Moshe, Esfali shivim mishne zikne Yisrael, gather to me 70 men from the elders of the Jewish people. So how is he going to pick 70? Omer Moshe. So Moshe thinks to himself, Ketzev Eseh, how should I do it? Ever shishim nikol shevet or shevet? Should I choose six from each shevet? And there are 12 shvatim. Doesn't work. Nim sir shnayim yisedim. Then I'm going to end up with too many. Too many. 6 times 12 is 72. Chamisha Mikol Shevet Veshevet. Should I choose only 5 from each Shevet? Then I don't have enough. 5 times 12 is 60. Nimsu Asara Chasedim. Then we're short ten people. Ever Shishim Veshevet Zeh, Chamisha Veshevet Zeh. So I'm going to pick 6 from some Shvatim and 5 from another. Then that's going to cause jealousy among the Shvatim. Why should our Shevet be deprived of an extra member of the Sanhedrin? Ma'asa, so what did Moshe do? Birush shisha, he picked 6 potential candidates from each shevet, so 72, but that's too many because you need 70. So the hevi shivim shnayim piskin, then he brought 72 pieces of paper. Al shivim kosev zokin or shnayim hiniacholak. 70 of them he wrote the word zokin on, and 2 he left blank. Bol and Renosan Makalpi, and then he mixed them up and put them in a box to make a girdle. Omalahem, then he comes and tells the 72 candidates, Boyur Tpiskechem, come take out your lots, come take out your papers from the box. Kol Misha Olubiyad is Zokin, anybody who gets a paper that says Zokin, which is going to be 70 out of the 72 of them. Omar, so Moshe would tell them, good, Krav Kidj Chashamayim, it shows that you've been made holy by Hashem, you're going to be one of the 70 Zkenim. Misha Olav Yodei Cholok, whoever gets a blank paper, Omar, Moshe tells him, Hakum Lechofetz Becha. Look, Hashem obviously doesn't choose you. A girdle is Min Hashemayim. Ma Esalach, what could I do for you? In other words, I can't override a girdle is Min Hashemayim. So we're saying that Eldad and Medad were left over in the box. Now, what does that mean? Within that, you have a couple of different explanations. Does it mean, so Rashi explains, in other words, that they didn't want to come for the, that Eldad and Medad didn't want to come to the girdle. They were afraid that they might end up drawing a blank, and then it's going to be like publicly demonstrated that Hashem didn't choose them, and therefore they decided to stay out of it in the first place. On the other hand, Marshal explain actually that Rashi on the Pasuk implies differently. And in fact, Mizrahi on Rashi on the Pasuk over there explains that no, what it means is they were supposed to be 2 of the 70, but they decided to hold back.
That means the Moshe told him what he told all his kin what he's planning to do beforehand.
Yeah, he told them to begin with, I'm going to be doing this girl. He says, look, we have 72 candidates, but we have only 70 positions to fill. Say what?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I think if you're trying to ask something, then you're breaking up, so I'm not sure what you're trying to ask. All right, well, let's go on. Anyway, yeah, so Mizrahi on the Rashi over there explains that actually they actually did draw blanks, and then Marshall says over here that no, not necessarily. They were afraid they might draw blanks, but in fact they wouldn't necessarily. Marshall also brings up some length over here from the Yerushalmi that discusses the whole procedure over here, that it wasn't so simple to just do like we say over here, that you just have 70 and 2. There had to be the Yerushalmi brings an opinion over here that there was a that the that there, after all the two that ended up drawing blanks could say, you know what, listen, I mean, and if you had written Zokin on mine, then I would have been chosen. So how can you say, just because I drew a blank, then not? And then see, the Yerushalmi brings an opinion that actually there was a nest over here that, in fact, it came out that the first 70 who drew did all draw Zokin, and then that way there's no room for complaint, because that way the 70 have already been chosen, and so forth. Okay. So before the Gemara continues with the story of Eldad and Medad, then the Gemara interjects with another example of this kind of thing, where Moshe had to make a girdle between two different groups, one that different things are going to be done with them. So, you have a similar kind of thing in Parashas Bamidbar, when Hashem tells Moshe, you know, we did the census, we have 22,273 Bechorim, we have 22,000 Leviim, actually the figures in the Pesukim over there, that there were 22,300 Leviim, but the Gemara in Bechorim explains that 300 of them were Bechorim themselves. So they are Poda themselves, they exchange themselves, so that they exchange their Kedusha of Bechor for the Kedusha of a Levi. But now then, after that, you have 22,000 and non-Bechor Levim, and you have 22,273 Bechorim from the rest of the Shvatim, and you need to make an exchange over there. That 22,000 of them are going to be exchanged for a Levi, and the other 273 are going to have to pay 5 Sloyim for Pidyon Aben. So you have the same kind of thing. The pasuk says, "Lakata chamesius shkolim lagogolos." Take from the remaining Bechorim 5 Sloyim per head, and give it to Aaron. Omer Moshe Ketzed Eser Lahem. So Moshe says, Ketzed Eser Lahem Yisrael. So Moshe thinks to himself, how am I going to do this kind of thing for the Jewish people? Same problem. If I tell him, give me your redemption and then your Yotze, Yomali, any Bechor can tell me. Ani ben Levi. Look, I'm one of the 22,000 who was substituted by a Levi. What do you want from me? So Ma'asam, what did Moshe do? Hey, the Esther Mishnaim Alofim Piskin. Here he had to take 22,000 pieces of paper, the cost of a land, Ben Levi, and he writes on them, Ben Levi. Bet he wished he had a copy machine. But anyway, Ba'al Shlosh of Ashivim, O Masayim, cost of a land, Chamisha Shkolim. The other 273, he put on it 5 Shkolim. Bolo and Menosan Makalpi, he mixes them up and puts them in a box. Amalahan, he tells all the 22,000 and some Bechorim, Boyer, Tzlupas Chechem, come take your pieces of paper. Misha Olav Yodah Ben Levi, anybody who picked a lot that said Ben Levi, Amaloi, so Moshe tells him, good, Klap Da'acha Ben Levi, then fine, you've been substituted by a Levi, you're potter from paying the 5 Sloyim. Misha Olabiyada, Chamisha Shkolim, anybody who picked one that says 5 Shkolim, Olaloi, then Moshe tells him, can Pidyon Chabot say? Well, obviously that shows that you have to pay your Pidyon, and then you're going to be Yotze. So that way there's no complaints. The point is, in other words, the Braith brings this in because it was a similar kind of thing over here. You have a certain number of slots, and you have more people than are available to fill those slots, and therefore you have to resort to a girdle like this. In the case of the Skenim, there were 70 slots to fill and 72 candidates. In the case of the Bechorim, there were 22,000 slots to be filled by those who are substituted by Levim, and 22,273 Bechorim. Marshall brings over here why by these Skenim, are we saying that he can leave two of them blank, and here he has to actually label the remaining 273 with 5 Sloyim, and he says because by the Bechorim, they start out with a Kedusha, they have a Kedusha in the first place. So if they were to draw blanks, then it doesn't necessarily mean they have to pay five sloyim. Maybe it means they actually retain their kedusha as bechorim or something. So therefore we need to actually say five sloyim. Meaning, it was one way or the other, you're not going to have your kedusha. You're going to have the kedusha of a bechorim in a different way, but you're not going to have the kedusha of a bechorim as far as doing the avodah. One way or the other, that kedusha is gone. Either it's going to a ben levi or it's going to five sloyim, as opposed to by the skedim. You don't need that. So all of that is one opinion about Eldad and Medad, that when we say Vayisharu means they were left behind in the box, whether it means that they actually, that they didn't want to draw because they were afraid of drawing blanks, or that they actually did draw blanks, or etc. On the other hand, Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon says, when it says they stayed behind, when it says Vayisharu Shnei Anoshim Mamachna, it actually means that they stayed in the camp, meaning that they were chosen, but they didn't want to go forward because they didn't want to put themselves forward. Namely, when Hashem tells Moshe, gather 70 men together, Omru Eldad Umedad, Einon Eru Uyin Loisik Dula. So Eldad Umedad thought to themselves, we don't deserve that greatness. So we don't want to be among the candidates. Omar Akadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to them. So in other words, that character, in other words, comes out according to that, just the opposite. Before we were saying according to the Tanakhama that they didn't want to, according to the Yesh Omrim, they didn't want to participate because they were afraid of drawing blanks. Here we're saying the other way around. They were afraid of drawing ones that say Zokin and actually being appointed to the Sanhedrin, and they didn't feel themselves worthy of that. So Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Reb Shimon continues. In that case, Hashem said, "Hurlami atzem atzmechem. Since you humbled yourselves and you acted like you don't deserve this greatness, harini moisif gdula al gdulaskem. Then on the contrary, I'm going to add a greater greatness. I'm going to add. You're going to have an additional greatness over everybody else. Umad gdula hoisif lahem. What greatness did Hashem add to Eldad and Medad? Shanavim kulam nisnavu posku. All the rest of these 70 skenim all said nevuah for a little while, and then they stopped. As the Gemara is going to explain in a little bit how we know. Now the pasuk says vayisnabu v'lo yosafu. The pasuk says they said nevuah, but they did not yosafu. Now, the word yosafu can actually have two different meanings. As the Gemara is going to point out soon, the word yosafu can mean they did not continue. So therefore, it would mean that they said nevuah and then they stopped. On the other hand, the Gemara is going to point out soon, the word yosafu can also mean just the opposite. They didn't cease. In other words, they continued being nevi'im for the rest of their lives. It actually brings both explanations on the pasuk, but here the Gemara is going to explain, according to Reb Shimon, at least, that it means, now we're going to see specifically that it means the other Nevi'im had Nevuah only for a little while and then stopped, whereas Eldad and Medad continued to have Nevuah for the rest of their lives. The Haim Nisnabu Volei Pasku, they continued to say Nevuah and did not cease. Okay. Uman Nevuah Nisnabu, what was the content of their Nevuah? So we're saying that they were saying nevuah. What exactly was the content of their nevuah? So the Gemara brings several opinions. Omru, they said, Moshe Mess, Yeshua Machnas Yisrael La'aretz. Moshe is going to pass away, and Yeshua is going to bring the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Bala Turim on the Pasuk over there mentions that with the word Misnabim, when the Pasuk says that a young man, now she says it was Gershom, Moshe's eldest son, when he came running to Moshe and says, Elder the maiden, Misnabim Mamachna, they're saying Nevuah over there in the camp. So the word Misnabim is actually an acronym for Moshe, Tanuach Nafshe, B'gan Alekim. Moshe's Neshama is going to rest in the Garden of Hashem, in Gan Eden. Yeshua Machnas and Yeshua will bring them in. So according to that, then, that's also a remez to this idea that this was the content of the nevuah that they were saying. Abba Chanin, Omer Meshum Rabbi Eliezer, Aliskis Slov Him Isnabim. Abba Chanin says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, a second possibility, they were saying nevuah regarding the Slov. Now, the whole context, why were the 70 Skenim being chosen in the first place, is because Moshe was sell his thing to Hashem. You know, the people are complaining. They want meat, and I don't know how to handle them anymore. It's too much for me. So Hashem says, fine, gather 70 Zkenim, and they'll help you, and they'll help you lead the people. So now the context is that they're complaining for meat, and Hashem says, fine, I'm going to provide you meat until you're sick of it. And that was the slug that came the second time in the Midbar, and Kibra said, Hava. So then according to Abba Chanin, then that's the content of Eldad and Maiden and Nevuah, just that. Ali Slav, come up, Slav, come up, Slav. So in other words, the Poshet saying in Nevuah right now that this is going to happen. Sodach Shah, how Sodashi says it was an immediate need over there. So in other words, the idea is maybe that Moshe is telling the people, Hashem is going to provide you meat, and now Eldad and Medad are specifying what it's going to be, namely that it's going to be Slav, and that the Slav are going to be brought up by the wind and brought to the Machne. And a third opinion, Rav Nachman Omer, Al Iske Goygum Mogog, Hoyu Masnabin. Rav Nachman says they were saying Nevuah about Goygum Mogog, far, far in the future, about Mochamas Goygum Mogog, they're saying Nevuah about that now. Shenema, the apostle says, Koyamar Hashem Alekim, so says Hashem Alekim, this is Yechezkel has the most detailed Nevuah about Gog and Magog. He's the one who provides their names. You have other Nevi'im that talk about details of Melchamas Gog and Magog. Zechariah, for example, mentions it, and we read that in Zach Torah, the first day Sukkot. But Yechezkel is the one who gives the most detailed description of Melchamas Gog and Magog. What do you call it? And so Yechezkel says, "Koyamar Hashem Alekim." So says Hashem to Gog and Magog in the far future. Ha'after who I should debout to the Yomim Kadmonim? Are you the one of whom I spoke in earlier days? The Yad Avoda Nevi Yisrael through the agency of my servants, the Nevi'im of the Jewish people. Hanibim by Yomim Ahem Shonim, who said Nevuos in those days and in those years. Lahavi Os Chaleihem Megomer, that I'm going to bring them on you. In other words, Hashem is saying, don't think that this is all your idea, that you came up with this on your own. In fact, I was thinking of this long ago, and I had this all planned already, that you're going to come and you're going to attack the Jewish people, and the result is that you're going to end up getting defeated and everything, as the Pesukim describe over there. So how do we see that this refers to Eldad and Medad? So Al Tikri Shonim El Shnayim. So Rav Nachman says, don't read the word as if it said Shonim, years, that it was years and years ago that the Nevi'im said this Nevuah about it, but rather Shnayim, two. The Ezra and Shnei Nevi'im, Shnisnabu, Perek Echon, Nevuah Achas, where do we find two Nevi'im who at the same time were saying the same Nevuah? Many times, there were different Nevi'im in different periods of Jewish history, but where do you find that there were two who are saying together Nevuah? Heavy Emma, Eldad and Medad, therefore you have to say specifically, it's Eldad and Medad. So therefore, so Yechezkel is hinting over there when he's talking about Gog and Magog that this is something that Hashem had planned long, long ago, and now it's actually going to happen. So there is actually a point actually Marsha brings from Targum Yonasan that actually all three opinions over here are actually getting their opinions from the same pasuk over here when it says Vaisnabu Bamachne. So what does it mean in the Machne? So you have So according to the first opinion that they're saying that Moshe is going to pass away and Yeshua is going to lead the Jewish people, so that means he's going to be the leader of the camp of the Jewish people. According to Rabbi Lazar, it means they're saying about what's going to happen in the camp that the Slav is going to come. And according to Rabbi Nachman, it's the camp of Milcham of Gog and Magog in the far, far future. The first two is easier to understand. They're talking about things that are going to be more immediate. Why they're talking about Milchamas Gog and Magog, which is going to be thousands of years later. One point is because Milchamas Gog and Magog is the final attempt of the 70 nations to fight against the Jewish people and overcome them. And here we just have that Moshe had been told to appoint 70 Zkenim, so like that counteracts that. And now the chus of those 70 Zkenim is going to overcome that those 70 nations that are going to come together with Gog and Magog. In fact, there's an interesting point that's made that the words Gog and Magog themselves are the after 70, so that would be an explanation of why at this point they're saying this Nevuah. Omar Mar, so now let's go back to, we said before that Rav Shimon had said Kol Nevi'im Kol Nisnabu Opostu, that all other Nevi'im said Nevuah, and then all the other Nevi'im, meaning all the other 70 that were chosen over there, had said Nevuah temporarily, and then they stopped. The heinous snob of like Pascu, whereas Eldad and Magad continued to say Nevuah afterwards. So the Gemara says Menolam de Pascu. Well, how do we know that the other 70 stopped saying Nevuah? We're going to say because the pasuk says they said nevuah and they didn't stop. You're going to say that yosafu means to continue. So you're going to say it means they said nevuah but they didn't continue. No, elamayata by that logic. What about by Matan Torah when it says kol gadol v'lo yosaf? When it says there was a great voice of Hashem that didn't yosaf. Doesn't mean that it didn't continue. No, the voice of Hashem continues forever. So that means, so just the opposite. V'lo yosef means that it didn't cease. It means that it didn't cease, it didn't stop. So the same way, by those 70 skanim, it can mean that it didn't cease, that they continued to say nevuah. In fact, actually, when it comes to that pasuk, kol gadol v'lo yosef, there are, in fact, several explanations in the Medrash of what that means. Does it mean that Rashi brings a couple of them on the pasuk over there? Does it, in fact, mean that it didn't continue? In other words, that it was a one-time thing in history that Hashem spoke to us by Har Sinai? Does it mean that it never stopped, as in other words, Hashem's voice goes on forever? There's also an explanation in the Medrash that says that it means that the voice had no echo, meaning that it didn't continue with an echo, as voices usually do. There's an interesting sicha where it ever points out the deeper meaning behind that third explanation, meaning, in other words, because an echo is when sound waves bounce off something rather than getting absorbed, and here everything in the world is able to absorb Elikos. There's nothing in the world that can oppose Elikos, ultimately, even Sholosh Klipos HaMeir. Are creations of Hashem after all, and therefore there's nothing to echo off of because Hashem's voice penetrates into everything. Anyway, the point is, here the Gemara is assuming that no, V'lo Yosef means that the voice of Hashem did not stop, but rather it continues forever. In the sense that exactly that Hashem's voice is infinite, and the giving of the Torah continues forever. That we keep on learning Torah and deriving new ideas in it and all. So therefore, the same thing by the 70 skanim, maybe v'lo yosafu means that their nevuah never ceased, but rather it continued for the rest of their lives. So where does Reb Shimon get that their nevuah ceased? Ella, like this. Reb Shimon is going to learn it as follows. The pasuk is saying about the other Rizkanim that they said nevuah in past tense. But when it comes to Eldad and Medad, it says that they are saying nevuah in the present tense. So it's not just because the boy Gershom is coming to Moshe and telling him, hey, Eldad and Medad are saying nevuah. It's actually hinting at Adayim Misnab and Vahochim, their nevuah is continuing on even now, unlike the other ones where it stopped. So therefore, we see from that yes, Eldad and Medad had an advantage over the others, and again, Reb Shimon is saying that's because they were humble and they didn't want to put themselves forward as candidates for the Sanhedrin. So the Gemara continues now. So again, we have three opinions of what the content of Eldad and Medad's Nevuah was. So Bishleim Lamander Amar Moshe Mess, according to the opinion that they're saying Yeshua is going to pass away, then we understand Hayne Dechtiv. We find that Yeshua was very upset that they're saying Nevuah, where he says Adoni Moshe Kloim. He says my master Moshe Kloim. We were going to talk about in the Gemara soon a couple of possibilities of what Kloim means. But actually, Gemara is going to bring only one. Rashi mentions on the pasuk a couple of others, but whatever, it means stop them from saying nevuah. So Yeshua is upset because what do you mean? You're saying that Moshe is going to pass away and I'm going to have to take over? I don't want that. So you can understand he's just upset at what it seems to be that they're being chutzpah and yak saying that. But if you say they're saying nevuah about the slav or about Gog and Magog, my Adoni Moshe Kloim, why? What's his problem with the nevuah that he's telling Moshe stop them? The answer is just a lot of Erech Ara. It's not Derech Erechtik, according to Yoshua figure. It's not Derech Erechtik for them to be talking like that. To have like a Talmud on Murda Halacha Lifnei Rabbi. It amounts to, it's like a Talmud giving a Psak Halacha in front of his Rebbe, which the Gemara mentions in a number of places in Shas. It's a chutzpahdika thing to do, and the Talmud can be severely punished for it, and therefore Yoshua's figures, Moshe is the head Navi over here. Fine, the other Nevi'im had Nevuah for a moment when Hashem's Shin rested on them, but that they should continue to be saying Nevuah. An independent nevuah of their own, that Yeshua couldn't tolerate, and therefore he says to Moshe that you need to stop them. And Moshe instead answers, "Me itin kalam Hashem nevi'im." I wish that all the Jewish people could have that level of nevuah. Well, the Gemara asks on that. The Shlomo Lamando Amahanach Tarti. I can understand according to the other two opinions about that they were saying Nevuah about the Slav or Gurgamogug. Heinrich did Miyitin, and that explains Moshe's reaction. You know what? Fine. Let them say Nevuah. By all means, I wish that all Jewish people were Nevi'im. Moshe mess, but if they're saying Nevuah that Moshe is going to pass away, is Moshe so okay with that? Okay, Moshe is on of Mikol Adam, but Ab Kadei Kach, that he's going to be willing, that he's going to be taught, that he's going to be fine with them saying in Nevuah that he's going to pass away. So why would he say Niyitim Kalam Hashem Nevi'im? And the answer is Lois Saimur Kameh. According to that, Yeshua only told Moshe that they're saying he only told him part of the Nevuah that they're saying. He didn't tell him the whole thing. Oroch HaNer asks on that, so what does it mean? So what did Yeshua only tell him that they said Moshe is going to pass away? Why is that any better than telling him and Yeshua is going to take over? So the Oroch HaNer explains, because we know, Bechlal, what was Moshe so eager to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he davened hundreds of tefillahs for it, is because he wants to do the mitzvah of Flurias Baretz. So if they only say Moshe Ness, then fine, Moshe is not so bothered by that. Fine, it just means that, so it means, in other words, so I'll live longer, I'll have a chance to go into Eretz Yisrael, and they'll all have a chance to fulfill the mitzvah of Flurias Baretz. So fine, Moshe Ness, they're saying Nevuah, that I'm not going to go alive into Shemayim, like Elio Anovi or something, it means that I'm going to eventually die like most people. So fine, then in that case, I have no problem with that, as long as at least I can get into Eretz Yisrael. But if he heard the rest of it, that they're saying Yeshua is going to lead the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael, then he realizes, well, that necessarily means he's going to have to pass away before that happens. That means he's not going to make it into Eretz Yisrael. He's not going to be able to do the mitzvah of Flurias Baretz. And if he had known that they're saying that in that part of the Nevuah, he would have been upset. So therefore, that's what the Gemara is asking. How could he be so calm about it and say, Miyitim Kalam Hashem Nevi'im? And the answer is because they only told him, because Yeshua told him, or Gershom told him, rather, whatever, that he only told him the first part, that they said Moshe is going to pass away, and Moshe figures, okay, that's fine. I'm fine with that as long as I can at least get into Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara says, my kloim, when Yeshua says to Moshe, Adoni Moshe kloim, what does that word kloim mean? Omalei, it means Yeshua tells Moshe, Yeshua suggests to Moshe, hatal alein sorchi tzibur, impose on them burdens of the tzibur. In other words, make them like they have to be administrators or dayonim or whatever for the tzibur. Behem kolim alein, and they'll stop on their own because then they're not going to be able to, they're not going to have the peace of mind, the peace of mind to give nevuah, because the Shechina, Tosfos points out, the Shechina rests on a person, only the toch simcha, and here they're going to be too busy with dealing with people's burdens to be able to do that, and therefore of necessity they won't have nevuah. Actually, on the pasuk mentions another possibility that kloim means arrest them, and a couple of other possibilities that meforshim and medroshim explain. But the point is that's what so one of those things is what Yeshua means. Okay, fine. Now, the Mishnah had said, so now that we dealt with, the Mishnah had said then that the composition of the Sanhedrin Gdola is 71 according to the Chachamim and 70 according to the Yehuda. Now, we said a Sanhedrin Ketana consists of 23, and the Mishnah had gone through the details of how we know 23. The gist of it is we need a minimum of 10 that are ready to convict him, a minimum of 10 that are ready to acquit him, and then that brings us to 20. Then you need a super majority in order to convict him, because as the Mishnah had said, we learned from Psukim that in order to convict him, you need a majority of at least 2. You need to have, for example, 12 saying to convict and 10 to acquit, and then he's guilty, and then that brings us to 22, and then you have an odd, and then you can't have an even number based in, so therefore you have to have a 23. So the Mishnah had said, how do we know that on top of the 20, you need another 3 to make a Sanhedrin Ketana, and the Mishnah had gone through that calculation. So the Gemara says, well, now if you're going to end up with an odd number based in, then you're not going to be able to have a majority of 2 to convict him. Because you're going to have 11 that want to acquit him and 12 that want to convict him, and then you only have a majority of 1 and you can't convict him. Then you only have 1 majority, and you need a minimum of 2 majority. And if it's 10 say that he's innocent and should go free, and 13 that want to convict him and have him executed, then you have a majority of 3. The pasuk is... The fact that, so in other words, it's true. Of course, you could have, once you have a majority of 2, you could just as well have a majority of 3. That's not the problem. But the question is, in other words, that, the Yad Ramah explains, the question is not that the Pasuk is saying, Davka, you have to have a majority of 2. But the question is, the Mishnah had taught us the din that you have to have a majority of 2. But if you have a base din of 23, then it's impossible to have a majority of 2. So how does that work? The answer is that you can find, that when can you find, a majority of two is like this. First of all, if you're adding members to a small Sanhedrin, and then, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then you can have an even number. But Divrei Hakel, that would be according to everybody, both the Tanakhama in Or Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda would agree with that point. Namely, in other words, you can have like this. You can have a case where the Beis Din is discussing and deliberating what to do, and you have one Dayan that says that I don't know. So you have, let's say, for example, you have a Beis Din of 23, 11 of them say, I know that we, let's say, for example, so let's say 12 of them say we know, we realize that we've decided based on what we know of the evidence that he is guilty, and therefore he needs to be executed, and 10 of them say no, he's innocent, we have reasons to exonerate him, and then you have one says I don't know. So then the din is we have to add more dayonim. So later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that in that case, we add more dayonim. So now, in that case, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, then there's no problem ending up with an even number. So then you're able to have a majority of two. Namely, in other words, exactly that. So let's say, for example, so you have this kind of case. You have 12 said to, so you had 12 said to convict, 10 said to acquit. We still can't say, well, we have a majority of two, let's go ahead, because we still have one Dayan, the 23rd, is holding out and say, I don't know what to do. So then, therefore, we have to add another, two, and now, then we revisit it. As long as the one who says that I don't know is present over there, then it means, in other words, he doesn't count as one of the Dayanim. So now you add another two. Now you have 25, of whom one is still saying, I don't know. So that means you have 24, and now you're able to have a supermajority of two, because now you can have 13 to 11. So it is possible to end up with a majority of two. That's one way, says Rav Abahu. The other way is, over Sanhedrin Gdolah, al libidir Yehuda, dama shittim. The other way would be with Sanhedrin Gdolah, according to Rav Yehuda, who says that there were 70 rather than 71, then you could have an opinion of 36 to 34. Okay. So Amar Rabbahu, and Rabbahu says in this connection, but my stiffen, when it comes that you have to add dayanim, because we said one or more dayanim says that I don't know what to do. Oisin basin shokolah chila, then the chila, even we can make an even numbered basin. We don't have to worry about everything that we were saying so far in the parak that we're concerned about time. So the Gemara says, Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? The fact is, we have 25, once we have 23, and then we add another two, then we have 25, and the Mishnah clearly says that we add two. So since we're ignoring the one who says, I don't know, because in effect we're saying we can't count you as a Dayan, that's the whole reason why we had to add two more in the first place, then obviously we're coming out with 24, which is an even number. We know that from the Mishnah. What's Rav Abahu's Chiddush? And the answer is, Ma'u de Tema, without Rav Abahu telling us, you would think, Hai de Karma any adair, commander Issei Domi. We would say, no, maybe the one who says, I don't know, is considered as though he is present. Maybe we do consider him to be a member of the Beis Din. And after all, V'i Oman Milsa, later on, if he says something about the case, he says, you know what, I realized something, Sham Inanle, maybe we should listen to him and add him back into the number, and therefore now we're going to have 25. Kamash Malan, said Rav Abahu is telling us, no. De Hai de Karma any adair, commander Lessei Domi. When he says, I don't know, in effect, we consider as though he's not there anymore, as though he's exited the Sanhedrin and he's not a member of it anymore, at least for purposes of this case. And that means even if now he says, you know what, I do have an idea, then we don't have to listen to him, and we still say, well, now we had before without you, we had 22, and that wasn't enough for a Beis Din, and now we need to add two more, and therefore we have 24, And we're not even going to listen to what you say because to begin with you say I don't know. The Yad Ramah discusses in some detail over here. So what does that mean? I mean, just because he said I don't know, fine, maybe he gets downgraded to the level of Talmud. But still, we have later on in the Sefer we're going to talk about that even a Talmud is able sometimes to speak up and to be a temporary member of the Beis Din. So the Yad Ramah discusses that it means, in other words, that. We may listen to him, but we don't necessarily accept him back as a member of the Beis Din for this case, and he discusses a little bit the ins and outs of that. The point is, in other words, so therefore, so that's what Rabbi Bahu needs us to know that point. That's what he means when he says that a Beis Din can eventually consist of an even number, namely when we started out with 23, one of them said, I don't know, which brings us down to 22, two more join, which brings us to 24 active Dayanim, and then we can have a majority of two. Let's talk about some more about the about when the Dayanim are deliberating. Amar Abraham, Sanhedrin shiro kolam lachoyva. If the Sanhedrin to begin with sees decides that the guy is guilty, then we patter him. Then we say that then we say he's potter from the punishment. My timer, why is that? Kivin the Gmiri, because we know that Kivin the Gmiri, Halonas Jin, Lamevad Leishchosa, we know that, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, that whenever they're dealing with a case of Jinin Nefashis, they always have to leave the case overnight in order to try to find a way to exonerate him. The rule is they can't try and convict him on the same day. We're going to learn later in the Masechta. They have to have, they hear the Eidos and everything, then they go home, they think it over overnight, they discuss it among themselves, and then the next day they come and they give their verdict. So the point of that is that overnight they may think between themselves or individually, they may think of some grounds on which to exonerate him, some particular detail in which the address maybe doesn't match up or some other consideration like that. Now, Bahani, these guys, once they started by saying that he's guilty, Tulei Chazulei, they're not going to be able to find them any reason to acquit. So in that case, we don't really have the system over there. It's not going to work to have them waited overnight, because then it just means they're going to come back the same day. They're going to come back the next day, still all saying that he's guilty, and therefore it's not going to do any good to leave it overnight, and therefore we potter him. Deeper reasons behind that, there's a lot of different explanations. One point is that after all, it should be possible to find some way of schus for him. If it turns out none of them can find a schus for him, maybe it means they're not actually judging him fairly, and therefore Hashem is going to have to take it into his hands. But we can't necessarily leave him to be punished by such a Beis Din. It can mean maybe fakir, that his avera is so serious that it is so grave that even this Beis Din even is not going to be enough of a kapara for him. And therefore that instead Hashem is going to have to deal with him for there. So there's a number of different reasons brought. There's a funny thing from some years ago. They one time had a symposium on Jewish law, and they invited Nassim Lewin was there, the famous Frum lawyer, and other leading lawyers were there, and they invited a Supreme Court Justice of the United States to speak over there. So he shells the Chumash Gemara over here, Scalia it was, and he shells the Chumash Gemara, and he says, so what's the reason behind it, that if they all decide that he's guilty to begin with, then we pastor him? He says that, two Jews, three opinions. So if all of them have the unanimous opinion that he's guilty, something's wrong over here, then we better acquit him. It was a cute joke, but maybe there's a shtickle truth to it as well, that if they all see that he's guilty, that means they're not really judging the case fairly. It may also be similar to the way, for example, we know a person is completely covered with saras, then they're tahor, which for that also there's a variety of reasons. The point is that, yeah, that's how it is. This is all at the beginning, though, when they're starting the case, and they all immediately say he's guilty. Later on, if during the deliberations it comes out that they all say that he's guilty, then it might be different. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ein Meshivin B'Sanhedrin Ela Balei Koyma. You have to have, in order to put a member of the Sanhedrin, they have to have the following qualities. Balei Koyma, they have to be tall, or Bali, because that way people look up to them, or Bali Chochma, they have to have Chochma of Torah and a practical matter as well, or Bali Mara, they should have a very imposing, respectable appearance, so that way again people respect them and look up to them. So that's that. Obali Zikna, they have to be old. They have to be old, because then that way they have life experience. So now later on, the Gemara is going to mention later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn they can't be extremely old. But the point is they should be moderately old, because that way people have respect for them. They also have to be Obali Kshofim. They have to be familiar with Kishuf. So Rashi explains the reason is because in case they're judging a person who did kishuf and is being brought to Beis Din for that, this person, the defendant, may figure, you know what, I'm going to use my kishuf to get out of being punished by Beis Din. So Beis Din has to know how to counteract their kishuf. Rashi also points out that, like this, for example, you have various people who are going to try to use Kishuf in order to convince people to worship Avodah Zarah, so they have to know how to be able to counteract that kind of thing. So they have to know that. The Yodim Ba'ayin Loshen, also the Sanhedrin, the members of the Sanhedrin, have to be familiar with all 70 languages. Shaloi Tehei Sanhedrin, Shamas and Piyam Turgamon, because you don't want the Sanhedrin to have to listen through an interpreter. You want them to be able to hear directly from the Edim, and not have to go through an interpreter, because eventually it's inevitably something that's lost in translation. Interesting in this connection, by the way, Marshal brings an interesting point on the psukim at the beginning of our parasha, when Yehuda goes to Yosef and says, let me speak into my master's ears, and it doesn't mean he's not going to take him by the ear and whisper into his ear. Rashi says, it means my words should enter your ears. In other words, please pay close attention to what I'm saying. So Marshal points out over here an interesting point, is that Yehuda is saying, look, now that we're dealing with a matter of dinin nefoshes, it's not just a matter of dinin mominus it's not just a matter of dinin mominus. We're dealing over here with a matter of dinin ephoshes, because I'm an orev, and Yehuda and Yaakov's and Binyamin's lives depend on Yaakov and Binyamin being able to go home safely. Then I want to speak directly to your ears. I don't want us to have to go through a meturgamon like we've been doing all this time in Parshas Miketz. I want to be able to speak to you directly. In other words, act like the members of the Sanhedrin. Look, he says to Yosef, I know you know all 70 languages. You're just like Pare, and it's known that Pare has to know all the languages. So I'm sure you know our language as well. Don't use a meturgamon. Let me talk to you directly. So an interesting vote on our parasha. Okay, the Gemara brings Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab. Here's another criterion for a person to be a member of the Sanhedrin. You can put on the Sanhedrin only a person who would know a way minat Torah how to declare a sheretz tahor. The Torah obviously says that a sheretz is tameh, but he would have to be able to come up with some logical way of saying that a sheretz is in fact tahor. Now, Tosfos asks over here and other places in Shas and in Eruvin, the Gemara also brings us, what's the point of that? Do we need a person who has kruma svaros like that? Harifus shel evil. Tosfos calls it a meaningless sharpness. The Torah clearly says a sheretz is tameh, and that's that. So Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam brings that it means that maybe he would say that he would argue that you can find the logical grounds to say, fine, you touch a dead sheretz, you tameh, but not if you carry it without touching it. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss that a little bit back and forth, and in Eruvin also Tosfos discusses it. So the point is, in other words, you need a person who's able to do that kind of thing, to come up with such kind of reasoning to be able to be matah or something that the Torah that to at least they should be able to show that there would be a reason to be matah it. And again, at least maybe to say that there is a certain aspect of it that should be Torah, which we don't clearly know from Torah Shabbat. So the Gemara gives an answer. Amar Rav, ani odun ratar Ravenu. So Rav says, or in Eruvin, it's Ravina says, sure, I can give a Kal V'Chomer, for example, to show that a Sheretz would be Torah. Let's figure it like this. He says, Uman Nochash, consider a snake, Shemaimus Umar Batumah, which causes people, kills people with its venom, and therefore it causes more tumor in the world, Tahar, and yet a dead snake is Tahar, it's not on the list of Shemona Sheratzim. Sheretz Shein Amemis Umar Batumah, well then a sheretz, such as a mouse or a lizard or the various other kinds of Shemona Sheratzim, they don't kill. Ein Adin Shehei Tahar, wouldn't it be a Kavachomer that it should be Tahar? But the Gemara says, Valoihi, that's not the fact is. We know that's not a valid Kal V'Chomer. Why? Needed to have a Koitz Ba'alma. Because you could say a snake is no different in that regard. Let's say that a thorn. A thorn could also kill somebody, and you're not going to say that a thorn is Tomei. So the same way, so we see that not everything that's deadly is in fact Matame. So it's not a valid Kal V'Chomer, but the point is, in other words, a person who's going to serve on a Sanhedrin has to be able to come up with such kinds of arguments, has to be able to come up with such kinds of arguments. Okay. The Gemara continues on this topic of we're saying that the members of the Sanhedrin have to know the 70 languages. Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Kol Ir She'en B'Shnayim L'Daber. When you have a town where you don't have in it two people who are able to speak all the 70 languages, the Echad L'Shmoya, and at least one person who's able to understand them. Now, sometimes you can have, you understand the language, but you can't speak it. So if you don't have that number of people in the town, Ein M'Shivin B'Sanhedrin, then you can't set up a Sanhedrin over there, because you need to have at least three of the Dayanim who are able to understand all the 70 languages. So it can be, one of them may understand it, but can't speak it, but then you have to have at least two of them that are able to speak in it as well. So the Ram points out, actually, since we said before, the reason was Shaloite Sanhedrin Shemas Mikiam Piam Togamon, you don't want to have that the Dayan should have to hear the Eidos from an interpreter. You want to be able to hear it. You want that he should be able to hear it directly from the Eidim. So maybe we would have to say, according to Rashi, that it's fine if only three Dayanim hear the initial Eidos, and then afterwards you can have the other 20 Dayanim can discuss it among themselves based on what the first three tell them. So you have to have at least that. The Yad Ramah brings a different explanation from Reb Shura Goyen that has nothing to do with the languages. It means that they need to have two people who know how to speak it thoroughly in Torah, without making mistakes, and then you have another one who's able to understand it, even if he can't participate always in the discussion, because he doesn't have the Mishnayos so clear to him, but he understands what he hears, and then he's able to make logical deductions based on that. So the Braita, instead of Yehuda, continues, Uber Beta Habu Shloisha. You should know that in the city of Beta, there were three such people who were actually able to speak all the 70 languages. Uber Yavna Arba, and when Sanhedrin was in Yavna, there were four people of the Sanhedrin over there who were able to. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, all three of them knew how to speak all 70 languages. V'Shimon HaTimni Donim Fnei B'Karka, and you should know Shimon HaTimni was a Talmud sitting on the ground in front of them, and he was discussing with them. So he also he would debate and discuss things with them while he was a Talmud, without being one of the four. So he wasn't a member of the Sanhedrin, but he was a senior Talmud over there. So the Gemara says Meisvi. I have a contradiction on Rav. A Braisa says Shlishis Chachama. If you have a Sanhedrin where there are three Dayanim who can speak the 70 languages, is called a wise, a smart Sanhedrin, Revius Ein L'mayla Hemena, and if you have a Sanhedrin that has four such people, there's no greater than that, whereas Rabban said that it's enough that you have two of them that speak the 70 languages. And the answer is Huda Omer Ki Hai Tana. The answer is that Rab is following what it says in the following Braisa, the Tanya, Shnia Chachama, a Beistin that has two members who can speak all the languages, is considered a wise Beistin. Shlishis Ein L'mayla Hemena, and if there's three, then there's nothing greater than that. In other words, once you have three, it doesn't really matter whether it's three or four or ten or whatever. They're the greatest advantage. There's a level where you have four such members, and that's it. That's the highest level anything higher than that is included in that level as well. So Rav is saying two or three respectively is following that. So since we mentioned Shimon HaTimni sitting in front of the Chachamim and discussing Torah with them, so the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about the various things where we sometimes throughout Shas mention Chachamim by pseudonyms. We mention them by an expression rather than the name of the Chacham. So here the Gemara gives the list of that, the official list of that. Lemaiden lifnei chachamim. When it says in a brisa, the ones who studied in front of the chachamim, that means Levi mei Rebbe. That means Levi learning from Rebbe. And when you have something quoted from those lemaiden lifnei chachamim, it means something that Levi said. Dunin lifnei chachamim. When it says the ones who debated in front of the chachamim, that means Shimon ben Azeb, Shimon ben Zoma, Bechonan Amitzi, Bechananya ben Chachinai. Those four chachamim. Rab Nachman Yitzchak says there are actually five of them because he says Shimon, v'Shimon, Chonan, v'Chananya. There are three Shimons: Shimon ben Azai, which was on the first list; Shimon ben Zoma, who is also, but also we have to add Shimon HaTimni, who we just said before was sitting on the ground in front of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, in front of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. So there were the three members of the Sanhedrin who knew all the languages, and he also did, but he was a Talmud. So he's the third one who's called Donim Lifnei Chachamim, Chonan B'Chananya, and then we have Chonan Amitzu and Chanani Ben Chachinai. So five altogether. Rabbi Senu Shebabavel, when we have an expression in the Gemara, all rabbis in Babel, that means Rabu Shmuel, that means Rab and Shmuel said that. Rabbi Senu Sheba Eretz Yisrael, when we have it says all rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, that means Rab Abba. Dayone Goyla, when we say the Dayonim of the Goyla, that means Kauna, who we had a number of times throughout the Babas. He was a contemporary of Rab and Shmuel, and he was an expert in Dinim Ominous. Dayone de Eretz Yisrael means Rab Ami and Rab Asi. The judges of Eretz Yisrael means Rab Ami and Rab Asi. Dayone de Pumbedisa, when it says the Dayone of Pumbedisa, means Rab Papa Bar Shmuel. Dayone de Nahavdar of Adar Bar Manyumi. He was the Dayan in Nahavdar, and when it says Dayone de Nahavdar unspecified, then it means him. Sove de Sura, when it says the elders of the Sura, means Rab Huna Rab Chista. Sove de Pumbedisa, when it says the elders of Pumbedisa, that's Rab Huna Rab Ena. Charifi de Pumbedisa, when it says the sharp ones of Pumbedisa throughout Shas, that means Eifa Ravimi Bnei Rachva, the sons of Rachma, whose names were Eifa and Avdivi. Amoroi de Pumbedisa, when we say the Amoroim of Pumbedisa, means Rabba of Rabbi Yosef. Amoroi de Nahardoi means Rav Chama. Nahar Baloi Masnu, when it says the people from Nahar Bala taught, that means Rami Barber Rebbe. When it says Amri Bei Rav, when we say they said in the Yeshiva of Rav, that means Rav Huna. So Gemara says, wait a minute, Vahamar Rav Huna, Amri Bei Rav. Don't we find in Shas that Rav Huna himself sometimes says Amri Bei Rav? And he's not quoting himself. So Elo Rav Hamnuna. So rather what we mean is that it's Rav Hamnuna. Is when we say Amri Bei Rav, means Rav Hamnuna is saying that. Tosfos discusses that at some length and explains that no, what it means is that it's not Rav Huna who had said Amri Bei Rav, it's Rav Hamnuna had said Amri Bei Rav. So we can still say Amri Bei Rav means Rav Huna. The fact that you found a contradiction to that wasn't Rav Huna who said that, that was Rav Hamnuna had said that. Another one, Amri B'Ma'arova, when it says they said in the West, that means Rav Yirmiyah. Shochum Itam, when it says they sent from there, from Eretz Yisrael, means Rav Yosi B'Chanina. Machaku Allah B'Ma'arova, when it says they laughed about it in Eretz Yisrael, means Rav Elazar. So the Gemara says, what do I mean? Shochum Itam, the Dibur of Yosi B'Chanina. We find a case where the Gemara says they sent from there that according to Rav Yosi B'Chanina, such and such, so Rav Yosi B'Chanina can't be Shochum Itam. So the Gemara says, Eipo, you're right, you have to flip around. The last two, Shochum Itam, Rav Elazar, Machako Alav Ma'arov, Rav Yosi B'Chanina. When it says they sent from there, it means Rav Elazar sent the message. When it says they laughed at the statement in the West from Eretz Yisrael, at something that the Meroim of Bavel had said, that's Rav Yosi B'Chanina did that. Although Tosfos points out there's at least one place where you find Rav Yosi B'Chanina saying something, and then it says, Machako Alav Ma'arov. Okay, but these are the basic rules of how we know who's saying what in various places in Shas.